ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वती व्यासं ततो जयानुधिनये Psalm 56 verse from the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the contents of Gita summarized. Lokeshu anudvigna manaha sukheshu vigataspriha vitaraga bhaya krodha sthitadhi Munihi Uchyate Dukheshvanu Vigna Manaha Sukheshu Vigataspriha Vitaraga Vaya Krodha Sthitadhi Munir Uchyate Dukheshvanudvignamanaha Sukheshu vigatasprihaha Vitaraga bhaya krodha Sthitadhir muniruchyate Dukheshu In the threefold miseries Anudvigna manaha Without being agitated in mind Sukheshu In happiness Ligataspriha Without being interested Yes Vita Free from Raga, attachment. Bhaya, fear. Krodha, and anger. Sthitadhi, whose mind is steady. Munihi, a sage. Uchyate, is called. Translation. One who is not disturbed in mind, even amidst the threefold miseries, or related when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called the sage of steady mind. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Swami Prabhupada. The word Muni means one who can agitate his mind in various ways for mental speculation without coming to a factual conclusion. It is said that every muni has a different angle of vision, and unless a muni differs from other munis, he cannot be called a muni in the strict sense of the term. Nachasrisir yasyamatam nadinam vanaparva mahabharata. But the Sthitadhir Muni, as mentioned herein by the Lord, is different from an ordinary Muni. The Sthitadhir Muni is always in Krishna consciousness, for he has exhausted all his business of creative speculation. He is called Prasantani Shesha Manohara Tarantara Stotra Ratna. O one who has surpassed the stage of mental speculations and has come to the conclusion that Lord Sri Krishna, O Vasudeva, is everything. Vasudeva Sarvamiti Samahatma Sudurlabha. He is called a Muni, fixed in mind. Such a fully Krishna conscious person is not at all disturbed by the onslaughts of the threefold miseries, for he accepts all miseries as the mercy of the Lord, thinking himself only worthy of more trouble due to his past misdeeds. And he sees that his miseries by the grace of the Lord are minimized to the lowest. Similarly, when he is happy, he gives credit to the Lord, thinking himself unworthy of the happiness. He realizes that it is due only to the Lord's grace that he is in such a comfortable condition and able to render better service to the Lord. And for the service of the Lord, he is always daring and active and is not influenced by the attachment or aversion. Attachment means accepting things for one's own sense gratification, and detachment is the absence of such sensual attachment. But one fixed in Krishna consciousness has neither attachment nor detachment, because his life is dedicated to the service of the Lord. Consequently, he is not at all angry, even when his attempts are unsuccessful. Success or no success, a Krishna conscious person is always steady in his determination. Dukeshvanudigna manaha sukeshuli katastrihaha vitraga vayakroda stitadhir muniruchyate. Translation: one who is not disturbed in mind even amidst the threefold miseries are related when there is happiness. One who is free from attachment, fear and anger is called a sage of steady mind. Saraswati Devi Guravani Pracharini Nirvishi Sushmiyavadi Pachitadeshkarni Panchakalpataru Deshchakri Pasindur Virgacha Patitanam Pavanidhyo Vashyavyo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunjanda Shri Arvaita Graha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare. I will say a few words on the topic of this verse. Krishna is answering the question of Arjuna. For the first time in Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is trying to relate to what Krishna is saying to him. Before that, Arjuna was not really in tune with what Krishna is talking. He couldn't really relate to it. But for the first time, a couple of verses before, he's really making this attempt to understand what's going on, what Krishna really wants to convey to him, what is the message Krishna wants to convey to him. And he has this question, how to obtain the steadiness of mind which you're talking about. Because before, Krishna mostly was talking about karma yoga as a means of living in this world, basically. So for the first time Arjuna is asking questions which is correct. And he's asking, who is this person? What is this? What is the nature of his intelligence? How I can recognize such a person? And Krishna, till the end of the chapter, will describe how the Sthita Dhira Muni behaves in different situations and how one can come to the stage of perfection. But what is specifically interesting when he tells these stories, first of all, from the very beginning, in the previous verse, Krishna pointed out the root cause of all the problems of living beings. He said, Prajahati Adakamanu Sarva Parthamanavati. He said that the root cause of all the problems which you may have, absolutely of all the problems which one can have, is kama. Selfish, egoistic desire. And this is the root, and from this root so many fruits are coming. The anger, the attachment, the selfishness, you know, all the problems. Whatever problem you take is coming from this very root. But then he says, and it's very interesting because this gives the hope, because he said, Prajahati Adakaman Sarva Parthamanogatan, that what you should do, what the sage of the steady intelligence is doing, he is just giving it up, just throwing it out. Basically, what Krishna is saying here is that in reality, the living being has nothing to do with all these desires which are being constantly produced in the pot of our mind. The pot of our mind is always bubbling. And there are one desire after another desire after another desire. So many desires are there, they're coming and coming and coming and coming. And the problem is that we think it's me. And because it's me, we can't really control these desires. Because it's me, how I can control something which is me? I can only control something which is not me. If it's me, I have to act according to these desires. And what Krishna is saying, from the first step, describing the steadiness of intelligence, from the outset, is that it's not you. Because if it was you, how would you give it up? You cannot give up something which is you without losing yourself. So what Krishna is saying is that it's not you, it's concoction. And Prabhupada actually very appropriately translates this, that this desire is the concoction of the mind, Manogata. Actually, I remember many, many years back, Satchinanda Maharaj was giving lecture on this particular verse here in Alnwick. He came and he remembered his Swedish roots. And he said that there are so many gatans here in Stockholm. And there is also Manogatan. There is this gatan on the street. So he said, here Krishna said that there are people who are going this Manogatan. Not this Harinam. So the people who are going this route of mental concoction, they are constantly producing all different kinds of desires. And what Krishna is basically saying is that you have nothing to do with all these desires. Just by some bad luck, but some misunderstanding, we identify with all these desires, and as soon as we identify with these desires, we cannot really give it up. Because this is the nature, that's me. If it's my desire, if it's me, I have to go for it. But if it's not me, then I can throw it out. And Krishna says, you can. Actually, unfortunately, people cannot imagine how they can exist without the desires. Because they're so much united with this desire, they're so much identified with this desire, that they think me without desires means zero. You know, if you tell somebody, give up all your desires, it will be a suicide for them. Because to give up desires means to give up my existence. But Krishna says, no, you can give it up and still be happy. Moreover, you will be much more happier if you do it. Because this is just a mistake. This is just a real mistake. And in this particular verse, Krishna starts explaining how these desires manifest. He says that the desires manifest in happiness and distress. Desires bring this happiness and distress. Vigata spriha. Spriha means desire. And they inevitably bring these two things. Sometimes people, everyone wants happiness. Nobody wants distress. But the problem is that you can't have one without another. If you want happiness, it means you want distress. If you invite happiness, please come. I like you. So behind the back of the happiness will come distress. Because this is one thing. You know, you can't ask for one side of the coin. Please give me only this side. I don't like the other side. This is one thing. Happiness and distress is one thing, because this is again the result of the same root. The root is the same, kama. Kama, which is deeply rooted in our heart, and it brings so many fruits, and this fruit is happiness and distress. And if you want happiness and distress, then you can have desires. But if you don't want at least distress, then you should give up the desires. And then Krishna says, Vitaraga Bhaya Pradhasti Tadir Muni Narachati. He says that basically he is more or less trying to point out the genealogy of the problems. The main problem is attachment of desire, which is raga. And from raga, so many other things go. Because raga, attachment, means that you will have hatred, and it means that you will inflict pain to somebody. And when you will inflict pain to somebody, you will love somebody, you will hate somebody, and this pain which you will inflict to others will sooner or later come to you. So what Krishna is explaining here by saying vita raga bhaya krodha, he says that if you have raga, if you have attachment to anything, and sisi panchaka sisi chaitanya mahaprabhu, he says, if you have raga or attachment to something, and even before that, when Krishna will further elaborate on this point, he will say that before raga there is some kalpa or liking of something. Raga, attachment, comes when you say, I like this, you know, even in a neutral way. Or even if you say, this is beautiful, or whatever. This is called sankalpa. Already there is some kind of liking within your heart. You know, oh, I like this. So very soon it will mature into attachment. And then attachment, raga, will bring bhaya. Because if you're attached to something, then naturally you will have fear of losing it. So from raga comes bhaya. Because if you're really attached to something, then losing this... Attachment basically means that you identify already with this thing, and losing this particular thing would mean for you to lose a part of yourself. It will be a partial suicide if you lose this. So therefore, bhaya comes. And this bhaya is a big problem. You cannot be peaceful, you cannot be happy in this world if you have bhaya. Like people in America, there was the big survey. What are the causes of people's fears? And only 10% of people say that they are fearful of death. 90% are not afraid of death. But 80% are fearful of losing their job. But basically it's the same. The fear again comes only from attachment. And attachment is the result of our false identification with matter. And we know that sooner or later we will lose it, and therefore fear comes. You know, fear of losing job is the fear of death in disguise. Because, again, you are falsely identifying with this particular situation in this material world, and for you to lose the job means to die, at least partially. So Krishna is explaining this genealogy, and in Srimad Bhagavatam this genealogy is more elaborately described, how from kam or raga, attachment, so many demonic qualities comes. And here Krishna says, vita raga bhaya krodha. Then, you know, if you have attachment or raga, either bhaya or fear comes, fear of losing something which is not you. Because this fear is totally useless, because if you can lose something, it means it's not you. If it's you, you cannot lose it. So you can only lose something which is not you, but still the fear is there because you falsely identify with these things. And then, again, because of attachment, krodha or anger comes. Anger means, you know, I'm attached to something and something is in between me and my attachment. And the anger is this energy which is there to destroy this impediment between you and your attachment. So, Vitaraga by Krata, therefore, Krishna, several times in Bhagavad Gita, he gives this as a compound, as one whole. Raga Bhaya Krodha. From Raga comes Bhaya, from Raga comes Krodha. And this is the very beginning of this totally, completely distorted condition of the mind. Completely artificial condition of the mind which all the living entities are experiencing. And Krishna is saying that, you know, if somebody is Sthita Dhira Muni, he should be free from this. Now, when we were here in this Hare Krishna temple, and this Hare Krishna temple means we are aspiring to get to the stage of stable intelligence. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he gave a very beautiful example which actually can help us to understand what Krishna really means when he is describing the state of stable intelligence. When he says, Chaita Dharkana Marjanam Bhava Mahadava Nirvapanam Seyakarava Chandrika Ditaranam. It's a very interesting statement, because what Krishna is explaining here, he's explaining a certain condition of the mind of the human being, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is comparing with a clean mirror. And if we look in a clean mirror, it has a very amazing quality. It can reflect anything, right? You look at the mirror, and your reflection doesn't stay there. You know, you go out, the mirror is again clean. Somebody else comes, it's not that, you know, his face is over your face, because you were reflected before. The reflection was there in the clean mirror, but then you went away, nothing is there. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he says that when the mind is clean, it comes to this original state of reflecting everything in this material world without being affected by the reflection. So, when we are unclean in our consciousness, and who is clean? There is nobody who is clean. And this uncleanliness or impurity within the heart is very strongly manifested in this effect, that something in this material world can affect you, and this influence stays within your mind. If your consciousness is not clean, if your mind is not clean, somebody looks at you in a very stern look. Or he doesn't look at you, but you think he looks at you with this expression. Or somebody tells you something really ridiculous, you know, somebody tells you, you are a fool. You know, nothing changes really in the universe because somebody called you a fool. But this pain remains within your mind for weeks, you know, and you're arguing with this person, you know, within your mind, you are a fool, I'm not a fool, no, you are a fool. But this is the manifestation of unclean consciousness. Because little thing from outside, and the more impure our consciousness is, the more susceptible we are, the more easily we are influenced from all these outside influences. You know, it's so easy to disturb us, you know, just little things, and it may not even exist. Thing which doesn't exist, but just by mistake, I think it's there, it's already disturbing me. And I can be disturbed in a disturbed state of mind for weeks. You know. Some mistake is there, somebody made a mistake, and I'm totally devastated because of some stupid mistake. So easy to disturb us. But this is, again, this is uncleanliness. It's like if you have a mirror, and the mirror is covered by the thick layer of dust and some grease. You know, so you come to this mirror, and you can very easily leave a trace or leave some message. You can write on this mirror or whatever. But what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is explaining and what Krishna is explaining here, if the mirror of your consciousness is clean, you still act. Prabhupada is explaining in the purport that if you have this clean state of consciousness, you are very active. It's not that you are passive. It means that you are reflecting this world, you are interacting with this world, you are still very much in this world in a sense. But at the same time, the world does not bother you anymore. And you remain happy and calm and transparent. You just reflect. And you act accordingly. It's not that you become totally crazy. Sometimes people think that to be Hare Krishna you have to be really crazy. And sometimes even listening to this, because, you know, to be Hare Krishna means you isolate yourself from this horrible demonic world. No, but Krishna says no. You be in the world. But if your consciousness is clean, you are in the world, but you are not affected by the world. Krishna himself gives this beautiful example of the lotus flower who is there in the water, but he is not, it is not affected by the water, it's not being watered by the water. It's not being, you know, the water doesn't affect it. So in the same way, the state of consciousness which Krishna is describing, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is describing as Chetadarpana Marjanam. This is the effect of chanting of the holy name. And we have to understand that this is a very important criteria for us. Krishna is not saying it in vain here. He is explaining that this is how we can understand whether I am progressing spiritually or not. How much I am still dependent on these external circumstances. Ultimately, I have to understand that if I am affected by the external circumstances, I am impure in my consciousness. And Prabhupada is explaining in the purport the reaction of somebody who has clean consciousness, the proper reaction. The reactions of happiness and distress is improper. You know, when something nice is happening to us, you know, we're so elated for a few seconds, you know, so happy, and something bad is coming to us, and we're so depressed for a few months, you know, and it's going on. But Srila Prabhupada is explaining what is the proper reaction. There is nothing inherently bad or good in this world. Everything is there to teach us. And the predominant emotion which should be there within our heart as the beginning stage of love. You know, sometimes we think about love and this is so high or whatever. But Krishna is teaching here karma yoga. Karma yoga basically means gratitude. The first lesson which Krishna gives to Arjuna, he says that if you develop proper consciousness, if your consciousness is clean, if you get the proper understanding of what's going on, that whatever happens with you, you have only one reaction. Now we have two basic reactions. Either we want to embrace it and want to have it more and more and more if we like it, or we want to reject it and we want to run away, or we want to, you know, destroy something which we don't like. But Krishna says there should be only one reaction. And it's very easy, you know, you can remember it very clearly. Whatever comes to you, you have to become grateful. It's simple. It's, you know, it's easy to remember. Something comes to you and you say thank you. Something good comes to you, you say thank you. Because usually when something good comes to us, we never say thank you because we think it's because of me. Right? Why should I say thank you? It's because of my intelligence and my skills and my nice qualities coming to me. So we never say thank you. And Krishna is wondering, why this guy is not saying thank you? Because I gave it to him. And when something bad is coming to us, then we try to find faults with somebody and we try to find somebody guilty or whatever. But again, in this situation we also have to say thank you. And it's difficult, you know. Therefore, this is the most important word which we have to learn. Whatever happens to us, we have to say thank you. Srila Prabhupada is explaining here that if something bad is happening to us, we have to say thank you to God, because it could be much worse. People, you know, they're so ungrateful. They're cunning and they're complaining all the time. Recently I had one lady, she came to me, young lady, quite pretty, you know, nice, healthy, and she started complaining, everything is wrong. She started saying, you know, I've been chanting for 5 years, nothing good happened to me during these 5 years. You know, I didn't get married and everything is bad and everything is really good. I don't have this and I don't have this. I said, please, consider what you have. She said, I don't have anything. I said, you have two legs. Easily you can have only one leg. Or no legs at all. You have two legs and two eyes. And you can breathe. You know, there are some people who have asthma and they cannot even breathe. We take it for granted. We think it's normal. It's because of my skills I can breathe. You know, but we can easily lose this little gift of God. You know, those who have asthma, for them, normal breathing is a luxury. They can't even do this. But people don't appreciate it. They usually don't really appreciate what they have. And what Krishna is explaining, that if the consciousness is clean, it really can reflect the reality, the real situation of the world, and invoke this gratitude within our heart. And the gratitude is the first step towards love, you know, when we are grateful. This is how we should learn. Basically, he's teaching karma yoga, and sometimes we being big bhaktas and, you know, pure devotees kind of neglect these teachings. But this is the foundation. Without, you know, being firmly established on this foundation of karma yoga, in a sense, or which is the expression of gratitude. Karma yoga is nothing but expression of gratitude. Karma yoga basically a very simple thing when we say thank you to God. But without this simple thing we cannot obtain higher realms of God consciousness. Because what happens to us if we don't follow these simple teachings, and our mind is still in duality of happiness and distress of this world, and our mind is still not clean, but at the same time we imagine ourselves that I'm, you know, I'm a gopi and very soon Krishna will invite me to dance with him or something like this. Or maybe not so soon, but at least when I die I'll probably be the next one to dance with Krishna. When we are in this illusion without following the simple teachings, then we don't really feel the presence of God or how God speaks with us. Because of our envious nature And this is nothing but enviousness when we reject whatever Krishna sends to us. It means, as I said, that we are not accepting reality. I spoke the other day in Hare Krishna Center about this. We are not accepting reality as the whole. But basically we cannot hear the language of Krishna. Yesterday I was with Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. And he asked me to read his book. I'm reading the second draft of his book about his life. It's a very interesting book. Of his spiritual journey, how when he was 19 years old boy and how he was traveling from Europe to India and how so many adventures were there during this path. But this whole book, the topic of the whole book, the real theme which is very transparent through the whole book is that when a person has this very strong gratitude within the heart, an accepting attitude, saying, my dear Lord, I'm yours, please lead me your path, then whatever will happen with you will give you a very valuable lesson. And it will be part of your spiritual journey. This whole book, really exciting and amazing book, is about this interaction when the sincere soul is begging the Lord to lead his path. Then whatever happens will bring a very valuable lesson, even if it's something really bad. And really, you know, the horrors which were there with Maharaj, I mean, I can't imagine. It's really... the stories which he describes, I was really horrified. But there you can see how he accepts all these lessons, sometimes horrible lessons, with grateful heart. And that gives encouragement to Krishna to give him more and more and more, and to lead him along this path. There is this famous saying by Mother Teresa, when she said in her prayers to God, my dear Lord, I know you never send tests to your devotees which the devotees cannot overcome or cannot pass. But sometimes I would love it. Sometimes I would think that you trust me too much. Sometimes I would love that your trust for me would be a little less. You wouldn't trust me that much. But in reality, what happens if you have this grateful attitude, then you hear, you understand the language of God. You basically start feeling Lord's presence in everything. And whatever you see around you will be the speech of God addressed to you. And in this way, practically every day will be a learning experience. It's interesting that in this book, Maharaj describes how he was getting these lessons from different rivers. His favorite pastime during this journey was that he would sit on the bank of the river, starting from River Thames, or how do you say it, in London. So he was sitting there, and then he sat on the river of Ganga, on the bank of Ganga, not on the bank, on the rock, in the middle of Ganga, for months meditating, and then he sat on Yamuna, on the bank of Yamuna, how different rivers were teaching him different lessons. And one of the amazing lessons of the river, which every one of us can learn, is this determination. The river, when it flows, it flows. Nobody can stop the river. It just flows. It flows towards the ocean or towards the destination. Nobody can really stop the flow of the river. And Prabhupada, in his purport, he speaks about the same. He says that when your consciousness becomes clean, the consciousness takes the quality of a river. And this is actually the also statement of Lord Kapiladev in third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, when he says that when the consciousness of a devotee becomes clean, really clean, through the practice of hearing and chanting and remembering the Lord, then it becomes like a flow, incessant flow, and it flows towards the Lord. Because this is the natural quality of our consciousness. It has this quality of the flow. And exactly the same situation is being described here, where Krishna says, when the consciousness is not disturbed, when there is no impediment, there is no dirt in our consciousness, then it takes upon it the quality of the flow, and it becomes really determined to reach its goal or destination, to come to the Lord, to come closer to the Lord, and to be with Him. And this consciousness, as Krishna is saying here, is the consciousness of Sitadhir Muni, of somebody who is studying his intelligence. He knows. What is the use of everything else? There is no use. There is absolutely no use in everything else. There is only one meaning in life, is to come closer to God by the means of our consciousness. And for that, we can have steady determination, and the steady determination ultimately will bring us to God. There is no doubt. As much as the river ultimately will reach its destination and come the ocean, so our consciousness will ultimately reach the final destination and come towards the Lord if it's clean and if it's not diverted to many different directions. So therefore it's so important that we chant with sincere determination the names of God, which is the first and foremost means of purifying our consciousness, Chaturdasya Namarjana. And then when it's there, when this condition is there, then the mind is happy. It just reflects the world. The world doesn't affect it. But the mind knows its real place at the lotus feet of the Lord. Like today, I was given a little calendar with this Sringar Lila in Vrindavan. You see, Panchakatya Pita. And there is this, of course, in Vrindavan, there is this Sringarvat, where this pastime is taking place. And this is a beautiful lila, because it has a very deep meaning behind it. Krishna at night is decorating the hairs of Srimati Radharani. And she looks in darpan, in the mirror. And usually when we look in the mirror, we see ourselves. This is the meaning of Sanskrit word darpana. Darpana means pride. And darpana means something which gives you pride. If you want to become proud, you just have a mirror in front of you and you look at it. Vidyadhara Maharaj, he told a funny story once. Some construction company, they built a huge skyscraper. But somehow or other they made a mistake, and the elevator was really slow. And so many people were complaining, you know, this is horrible. And they couldn't change it, or it was too expensive to change it. And they were trying to solve this problem. They didn't know what to do because the elevator was slow and everyone was complaining. So somebody said to them, just put a mirror in the elevator and everything will be okay. All the complaints stopped immediately. Everyone had a very meaningful engagement in the elevator by looking in the mirror. Therefore, in Sanskrit, the mirror is called darpana, something which gives you pride. And basically, our mind also has this quality. It's something which gives us pride. The main business of the mind is always to say how good you are, how nice you are, how perfect you are, how pure devotee you are, and so on and so forth. Because we always see us. But in this pastime, which took place in Vrindavan, in Sringarbha, Srimati Radharani is looking in the mirror. But she doesn't see her own reflection in the mirror. She sees Krishna in the mirror. Because the mirror of her consciousness is totally clean, and therefore she doesn't see herself. She doesn't become proud because of this pastime. You know, I'm so beautiful. Krishna himself is decorating me. No. She only wants to see Krishna, and therefore she sees Krishna in this mirror. And this is basically the meaning. If our consciousness is clean, then sooner or later the reflection of Krishna will appear, and then we will look at this reflection, and there will be no pride, there will be only interaction between us and Krishna, who is reflected in the pure mirror of our heart. And therefore Krishna is explaining that you have to try to steady your intelligence by getting rid of all the concocted desires, which are useless and futile, basically just a nuisance, disturbance of the mind. Okay, thank you very much.
If we receive obstacles to our Krishna consciousness, can we be grateful?
Yes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is famous for saying one thing. In one of his songs he says that whatever obstacles I have, I take it as an ecstasy. Because the obstacles means I have more opportunities to serve you. There is no obstacles, how can I serve you? How can I express my love? But my favorite quote of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the other one, but of the similar meaning. He was trying to get to Navadvipa. And he was there in Bengal, you know, he was in Orissa for some time, but then he was moved to Bengal. Still he couldn't go there, he couldn't come there. So many impediments were there, you know. They didn't let him go from the job, there was no trains, this and that, so many problems were there. Finally, when he was all, you know, set up to go there, really, really determined, he gave up his job, you know, he said, that's it, I'm going to Navadvip, you know, he got sick. For 40 days, he couldn't move, you know, he almost died. He had actually, for 20 days, he was taking only milk to cure the disease. Ultimately, he somehow or other got cured. And he wrote in his diary, at the end of his disease, he wrote in his diary, so many obstacles. Something good must come out of it. So that was his conclusion. There are so many obstacles, the result will be good. So he liked the obstacles. He said, that's great. So it means that something really good is in store in the future for me. He's asking, what did I feel in Moscow in this connection when we were fighting for the land? That's why I said that this is my favorite quote from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's not a coincidence that I like this quote. I like this quote because we have constant struggle. No, it's so nice. From all sides. From the government, from the devotees, from our own mind and senses. You know, my only solace is that something good must come out of it. And it's coming actually. 3 days ago we got the registration. Now the land, 2 hectares of land in Moscow City, given by the government, is registered on the name of ISKCON. Finally, officially registration, we got the document, the paper, it's on our name. So after so much struggle, it's gone. But of course the main struggle is still for by the loss. We have to come up with so much money. No, it's not in the center. It's further away from the center, but I think it was Krishna's plan to move us. He probably didn't like to be there in the center because it's too, you know, no sane person would like to be there because it's too insane. Krishna decided. It's a very nice place. It's a very scenic place on the bank of the river. Beautiful. So we will probably have some preaching center in the center and big. And the advantage is 2 hectares. The advantage is that we probably will be able to build the first design to this beautiful town. So I think that the idea. And I'm sure this is the result of all the sincere prayers of all the devotees all over the world. This is actually their credit, not our credit. It is very difficult. From all sides. Yeah. Basically, that's the arrangement. I mean, hopefully, we will build this first design which we want to build. That's hopefully the. Hopefully the outcome of this struggle. It's probably, somebody explained it, why it was so difficult, why we ultimately ended up in this land, because probably so many devotees liked this first design, and they got attached, and they were praying to Krishna to build this one. So now he gave us opportunity to build this particular one, you know, leading us through the mess of this. Okay. Thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada ki.